Let's get started here. The text, Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in His ways. You shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands. You shall be blessed, and it shall be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. Well, I'm going to keep it pretty simple tonight. I'm going to give us a brief introduction, and I realize you probably can't hear me when I turn here, but I'm going to give a brief introduction, then we'll give an exposition of the text, and then we'll conclude and call it a night. I won't labor an introduction to the Psalms in general because it's done by other people, such as Jeremy and others. But actually, Jeremy, you didn't give an introduction of that, but that's all right. I should have taken your lead on that. But as you know, Psalms are divided into five sections. We're doing Psalm 5, which is the Songs of Ascent, and Psalm 128, which is our text tonight, would be obviously part of that. Psalm of Ascent, there's been a lot of debate about what Psalm of Ascent really means. Without getting into a lot of debate about it, I think that the standard rendering that it refers to ascents or climbing or degrees, you'll hear the Song of Degrees spoken of as well. It's talking about ascending, climbing up to Jerusalem for the annual feast that every Jewish man was expected to participate in. A word about the Psalms. John Calvin says that the Psalms are an anatomy of all parts of the soul. And then Spurgeon comments that there was a time when the bishops would ordain no man who did not know David, that is the book of the Psalms, by heart. And everybody recognizes that man. Who's that man right there? Anyone? John Calvin. Very good. Most of my material that I got was from Calvin tonight, so don't blame him if it was bad. But I do want to give a quick word about Calvin. I realize I'm preaching in the choir. This is a Presbyterian church. But I just would like to say a quick word about him before we get started. And I will comment on him by referring to yet another man. So bear with me here. I've always thought that there are two types of people. They're the people that like C.S. Lewis, and they're people that do not. I happen to be in the first category, the people that do like C.S. Lewis. Not that I consider him the most eminent, preeminent theologian out there, because he's not. He has some, you know, a few little glaring problems in his theology. But man, oh man, does he not have a way with words. And the ability that he has to take words, to take ideas and put them before your mind and bring to light things that you've thought about or seen hundreds of times before in a bright new way, is hard to match. And that's why I like C.S. Lewis. I have also thought that there are two other types of people. Those who like John Calvin and those who have lost their mind. Because John Calvin also has a way with words, and he is a preeminent theologian. So it's the best of both worlds. So shout out to John Calvin. I hope you'll read him. As far as uninspired writers go, he's pretty hard to beat. And he certainly blessed me. And as I said, a lot of the material that you'll see tonight, I pretty much stole from him. Moving back to the text. Brief introduction to Psalm 128 itself. Spurgeon says that it is a song of degrees or ascents. There's an evident ascent from the last psalm that did but hint at the way in which the house may be built up, thus draws a picture of that house built, and adorned with domestic bliss throughout the Lord's own benediction. This psalm is akin to the preceding, and so to speak, it is a kind of appendage to it, for it declares that the divine blessing, to the diffusion of which among the whole race Solomon testifies, is to be seen most conspicuously in the case of God's true and sincere servants. As Calvin mentioned, Psalm 28 is really thought to be a footnote, if you will, to Psalm 127, as Whitehead famously said that basically all of Western philosophy is a footnote to Plato. One could argue that Psalm 128 is but a footnote to Psalm 127. So when we think about Psalm 128 tonight, please think back to Jeremy's talk on Psalm 127, because they are wed together. This psalm is fitly subjoined to the former and is a kind of wedding sermon written for the instruction of married couples, and it teaches that human marriage is the divine academy of life, Traff's complete commentary. So that we see that God blesses his children, and it is a blessing to realize that you are blessed. The blessings of the Lord are derived from the fear of the Lord. Does anyone know who that is? It's on the slide, so you can guess. Robert Layton. We'll now begin, after giving a brief introduction, we'll now get to the text. Verse 1, blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. The true reverential fear of God will easily form the heart to a right obedience. They that fear the Lord will keep his covenant. And therefore was the law derived at first in that terrible manner. That also is from John Trapp. But Layton rightfully remarks that this fear is still subjoined with trust. What does that trust look like? Hold that thought. I'm going to burn my mouth again. What does that trust look like? Well, all human analogies do tend to fail, but I draw back to a story from my childhood. So y'all are lucky to hear about childhood stories, right? Story from my childhood, and I think that you all can relate to this, is as a child, I would get on the couch, get on the coffee table, get on the kitchen table. My mother didn't like that one too much, but pretty much any height that I could get, and I would like launch myself to wherever my father was in the room. And he would always catch me. That is trust. I had no doubt in the world that he would catch me. He never dropped me. He probably was annoyed I kept launching myself at him, but he never dropped me. That is trust. What is fear? Well, same man. I feared my father, you know, especially when I was doing things wrong. I think we can relate to this as well. I remember the sound of his footsteps. I didn't have to see him. I just had to hear him. So when I was doing something wrong, I heard those footsteps. There was fear, but it was also subjoined with trust. In the preceding psalm, it was stated that prosperity in all human affairs and the whole course of our life is to be hoped for exclusively from the grace of God. And now the prophet admonishes us that those who desire to be partakers of the blessing of God, much, much with sincerity of heart, devote themselves wholly to him. For he will never disappoint those who serve him. That also is Calvin. I think it's helpful to compare verse 1 of Psalm 128 to Psalm 1, because there's so much similarity. I almost have it memorized by heart, but I tried to do that when I was practicing with my wife earlier, and I fumbled it up miserably, so I'm just going to read it. It's a very familiar psalm to everyone, as I know. Psalm 1, Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields up its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. All that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so. They are like the chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the righteous know that the way, for the Lord knows the ways of the righteous, but the ways of the wicked will perish. Verse 2, you shall eat the fruit of the labor of your hands, and you shall be blessed, and it shall be well with thee. This is the portion of God's saints to work and to find reward in so doing, for our God is the God of laborers, Spurgeon. It is his love which gives a relish to all that we taste. It puts life and sweetness into all. Wesley. For he can make himself useful to others and still be independent of them. He eats the bread of blessings which God gives, which is sweeter than the bread of charity which men give. Kiel and Delitzsch, Old Testament commentaries. So the Lord not only gives us the fruit of our labor, but he blesses the fruit of our labor, and he allows us to enjoy the fruit of our labor. But what's more than that, he allows us to enjoy the labor of our labor. So it's not just that we enjoy the fruits, but we enjoy the labor itself. I can give you an illustration of what that does not look like. I'll also give, I think this is the last childhood story I will give, but I'll give you another childhood story to illustrate what this does not look like. I also think that you can relate to this. When I was growing up, we had a garden. It wasn't big. It was about a half-acre garden, something of that nature. I hated that garden. I utterly hated that garden. It had the normal things a garden has. It had okra. It had squash. It had corn. But the thing that it had the most, that I hated the most, was the potatoes. Has anyone had a potato patch in their garden? Anyone? There you go. Right. So what do you do with potato patch? But not only do you have to grow them and put it in there, but you got to cover it with something, right? You got to, you know, throw stuff on it. So what did we throw on it? We threw pine straw on it. Well, in my house, you don't buy pine straw from Lowe's or Home Depot. We don't do that. We went to get pine where pine is found in the woods. So we had to traipse out into the middle of the woods where the pine trees grow and get the sticks out of the pine leaves, rake it up. I was miserable. I mean, I considered myself an Israelite, an Israelite out in the woods. Not only did I have to make bricks, work in the garden, but I had to get my own straw. I was livid. So anyway, we get the pine straw, we rake it up, we put it in the back of the truck, and we come back, and then we throw it on the garden. Voila. That was me not having a thankful, grateful heart. And why did I not feel blessed in that garden? Why did I not enjoy the fruits of our labor? Why did I not enjoy the labor of our labor? Well, because I did not have a thankful heart. And that really came from a heart of entitlement. Why in the world do I want to work in a garden when you basically owe it to me anyway? Or so I thought. Why work in the garden when it's basically something that I'm owed that you should give to me anyway? A sense of entitlement really was destroying my sense of being blessed by the fruit of our labor and enjoying the labor of our labor. That's what that doesn't look like. So that's the negative. What's not supposed to look like, what's supposed to look like is that by the grace of God, we enjoy the fruit of our labor. And more than that, the labor of our labor, too. We actually enjoy it. The Lord actually helps us to enjoy the work of our hands. Verse 3. Your wife shall be like a fruitful vine within your house. Your children will be like olive shoots around your table. House and wealth are inherited from fathers, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Well, any of us that have wives know that. Well, we've talked about that in the positive, what that looks like, and we'll talk about that in the positive some more in a second, but I think it is helpful to look at it from the negative aspect as well, because I know what some of you are thinking. And it's the same thing that I was thinking when I was going through this, is that what if you don't feel like you have a fruitful wife? What happens when you feel like you don't have a faithful wife? You don't feel like you have a faithful wife. You don't feel like your kids are olive shoots. You feel like they're stumps. What do you do about that? Well, you have a number of possible options on that one. But I think all other things being equal, we should look to the scriptures and see what that looks like. What's a pretty good example of someone who did not have things going so well for him? You don't have to look any further than Job, right? So let's take a look at that for a second. If you want, you can turn with me if you want to. If not, just listen along. I'm going to read Job 4 here. It's a very well-known text. Job 1:13-19. Now there was a day when his sons, that is Job, and sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest daughter's house, older brother's house. And there came a messenger to Job, and he said, "The oxen were plowing, and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabians fell upon them and took them and struck them down, struck down your servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was yet speaking, there came another and said, "The fire of God came from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Yet while he was still speaking, there came another and said, "The Chaldeans formed three groups and made a raid on the camels and took them and struck them down, struck down your servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Well, children aren't looking so fruitful right now. How about a faithful, fruitful wife? You know, at least he has that, right? Not so fast. You remember the text as well. Job 2:9-10. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" And what else did he say? Job said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." That is the righteous response. So when we don't feel blessed, we don't feel as if our wife is faithful, and by extension, our husband is faithful, that is the response we give. This can only be done through the eyes of faith, and it certainly can only be done by the hand of God. We don't have the power to do that ourselves. Well, not to be too negative, we've talked about what a faithful wife does not look like, what, even though it really wasn't the children, they just really just got killed. That's all that happened to them. But we saw that from a negative standpoint, what it looks like to not have a faithful wife. Now let's get back to the text and talk about what is a faithful wife, or what is a fruitful vine. I was, you know, going to talk for a few minutes about what I thought a faithful wife or fruitful vine looked like, and then I recalled that someone had spoken about it before me. Maybe you've heard of him, Solomon. Then I thought that all other things being equal, an uninspired word from me is not going to be as good as an inspired word from Solomon. So I went with Solomon. So let's take a look at that real quick. It's a little bit of a long text, but bear with me, please. Proverbs 31. An excellent wife who can find. She is more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and does no harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She's like the ships of the merchant who brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and she buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. That's fruitful. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hands to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household is clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and she sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchants. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the times to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. That is what a faithful and a fruitful wife look like. Sorry, I got a lot of myself there. Well, this is verse 5, but I'll do verse 4 is in here before. Sorry. Verse 4 is, behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Verse 5. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. So you see that the Lord blesses us both in our work, the fruit of our labors, the labor of our labors. And he blesses us in our family. He blesses us in our spouses. But ultimately, as Jeremy brought out so clearly at the last Bible study last Wednesday, Psalm 127, that ultimately you have to look at this from a covenantal perspective, that ultimately our blessings come from Zion, from heaven. The Lord bless you from Zion. May you see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life. May you see your children's children. Peace be upon Israel. So, a couple comments about that. Long life and large families were considered a blessing, as you know, to ancient Israel, particularly in light of the Abrahamic covenant. Well, let's take a quick look, if you don't mind, quickly, at the Abrahamic covenant, because I think it's important to see that ultimately we're talking about All of these things are seen in light of the covenant. Genesis 12, 1 through 3, also a very well-known passage. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those that bless you, and to him that dishonors you, I will curse. And in you and all the families of the earth will be blessed. So when Abraham looked up into the stars of the sky, if you were a child of God, one of the stars was for you. This was amazing. But there's more. What then did the Lord say to the childless Abram? Well, let's look at Genesis 15 and find out. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. He said, fear not, Abram, I am your shield. I am your exceedingly great reward. So again, work is a blessing. Labor is a blessing. Family is a blessing. But ultimately, it is God who is our reward. He is our exceedingly great reward. How did Abraham respond to all of this? Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him as righteousness. That should be our response as well, because in the same way that Abraham did not see these things, but believed them in faith, how many of us here do not see blessings in our work, do not see the fruits of our labor, do not see blessings in family, do not see blessings in spouses, and sometimes do not see the blessing of the Lord? Now, the last we have at all times and in all ways, shrouded as it may be, the first two the Lord will give you if he sees fit. And our response is to be as Job. Our response also is to be as Abraham, that we believe God and it will be credited to us as righteousness. And yet there's more. We're all aware that we live in the already and not yet. We have some of these blessings. We see them to a degree now, but ultimately not to fruition. There's more. Our joy is mingled in tears. As I was reading this, the Abrahamic covenant, we've all seen it many, many times before. We've done a whole Bible study. Pastor Phillips has done a whole sermon series on it. But it just struck me, and I have to comment on it. It never ceases to amaze me. In addition to God's covenant with Abram, what else did he say during that time? Look at verse 12 of Genesis 15. As the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, dreadful and great darkness fell upon him. Then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your offspring will be sojourners in a land that is not theirs, and will be servants there, and they will be afflicted for 400 years. But I will bring judgment upon that nation. It really struck me, the Lord is not as I am, right? Shock, right? But I'm not so sure I would have included all of that when I was giving the blessing to Abraham. I'm not so sure I would have mentioned that. Abraham was not going to be alive when this stuff happened. I probably would have just, kept it to myself. But that's not the way the Lord works. He does reveal these things to us. The Lord in the Bible, the Lord revealing himself via the Holy Spirit through the Bible, does not give us an idealistic view of the world. It doesn't promise us that everything's going to be smooth, that everything's going to be clear, and that we're not going to have problems. You see here, yes, you'll be the father of a great nation. You will be the father of many nations, of which we are one, if we are children of God. But, by the way, 4 years, 400 years, your children will be slaves and servants in the land. Now, the Lord is right to do that. He does what he will. But the Bible doesn't present us an easy, idealistic life. The Bible does not present us a world without troubles. However, what was Abraham's response to all of that? That also struck me as amazing. After he was told that for 400 years his children would be slaves in a land not their own, what was his response? He held his tongue. The wisdom of a Christian, or I will paraphrase Sinclair Ferguson on this. This is a loose paraphrase, but a Christian is one who has learned to stop his mouth. Abraham knew how to be grateful. He was being blessed wonderfully, but he also knew when to accept the blessings of the Lord and not to grumble and complain, because he had a heart of thankfulness. I hope you don't feel like I'm veering too far from the text here, but this is important because this is the world we live in. It's not, we are blessed. We are blessed greatly, but we do have troubles in this world too. But we have been given examples such as Abraham and Job to where we will have a thankful heart and a grateful heart. These things can only be seen through the eyes of faith. Conclusion. Everybody waits for that. Conclusion. Our hope is in the Lord. He ultimately is all you have and all you are ever going to have. He certainly blesses us in family. He certainly blesses us in work, not only the fruit of our labor, but also the labor of our labor. But ultimately, he blesses us in himself. He is our exceedingly great reward. The Lord nevertheless supplies us with rich mercies in this temporal life. Success in labor, success in family are real and they're meaningful. To deny this is to deny the Bible and to be a spiritualist or agnostic. To see these things as ends in themselves is also to deny the Bible and to be a materialist. To understand these things, you must have a spirit-filled heart of thankfulness and a heart filled with reverential fear of God.